From halfway to all the way, day 48, 256.7. I suppose the food I was eating and still eat qualifies as bland, but very spicy. Maybe bland just means not much salt, sugar, and fat. The diet has changed my senses, and what qualifies as bland was surprisingly flavorful. I could taste the vegetables. Celery tasted salty. My sense of smell was better, and now I cared about smells. I liked the subtle, healthy smells of food being cooked. I started burning scented candles in my office while I worked. I was becoming a fucking hippie. Every night, after every Penn & Teller show we've ever done, Teller and I go out and meet the audience. If anybody wants something signed, we sign it. It's become popular lately for other shows to charge an extra $100 for a VIP meet and greet, and the entertainers will meet only with anyone who's paid the extra jingle. Well, everyone is a VIP with us. We don't do it to offer added value. We do it because we like it. It seems that if people like our show, it's likely we'll like them. Doing this for 40 years has made us different from other entertainers. The only feedback other performers get is on stage. So if a crowd is quiet, other entertainers are bummed. But we go out and talk to people, and often the quietest crowds contain the people who are the most enthusiastic and kind when we meet them after the show, when it's one-on-one. When I'm seeing a show, the better it is, the quieter I am. I can barely bring myself to applaud when I'm watching Dylan. I'm afraid to lose my concentration, to break the spell. After 40 years, Tell and I have grown to trust and enjoy the quiet audiences. You could point out that this is a self-selected sample, that the people who come up to us and wait to meet us are the few people who like the show, while the rest of the quiet crowd really hated us. You could say that, and you might be right. But you'd be a prick. So everyone gets VIP treatment at our show. Some entertainers thought we did this for business reasons, and that explained the success we'd had. So they tried it, but they stopped after a while. It doesn't seem like you can do this if you don't love it and really love your audience. On our last run on Broadway, meeting everyone after the show got to be too hectic and crazy, and a couple of times the post-show lasted longer than the show, so we had to make it more organized. We were out there for over 90 minutes. When we played the Hammersmith Apollo in London, every night we were meeting people for longer than we'd been on stage. The theater staff would close up and go home, and we'd be out in the street with our audience in the dark, except for cell phone camera flashes. We loved it. Some entertainers will sign only their own merchandise. We'll sign anything. We've signed more than a couple arms and backs for our signatures to be turned into tattoos. I always feel guilty at how shitty my writing is when that happens. Since there are two of us, and breasts often come in pairs, we've signed a bunch of those. And Teller draws a nice ampersand on the lady's chest between the tit flesh. I've only signed a couple of cocks, but I still think about ways to make it say Penn and Teller when flaccid, and then Penn is the tall one who talks and Teller is the shorter one who doesn't really talk all that much when aroused. If more men asked us, we'd work that out. If anyone in the crowd wants to take a picture with us, we pose with them. Teller billboards himself to people as the king of selfies, and he takes pictures for them like a politician. I like to encourage cooperation among strangers, so I have people hand their cameras to a stranger to take the picture. We pretend that people can talk to us during this process, but the awareness that other people are waiting cuts off conversation and lets people hang out for over an hour until everyone is gone. But the crew is waiting backstage to get my mics and suit off so they can go home, so chat time is kind of limited to, "You are better than I thought you were going to be." My diet changed the post-show. All of a sudden, I could really smell people. I could smell their perfume, hair care products, soaps, and breath. I never noticed that stuff before the diet, but now I was really aware of it, and it bothered me. It distracted me. There isn't that much to be distracted from. I'm just saying, "Thanks, boss," over and over while looking at people. I hope no one ever catches me, but my thoughts are not chased while I look at attractive people in our audience. If you come to see our show, and you come up to me afterward to get something signed or to take a picture, you can bet your well-imagined ass that at the very least I'm picturing you naked. Since there's usually no formal cue but just people gathered around, I have some control over who comes next for his or her picture. If I find you really attractive, I'll skip over you a few times so I can keep looking at you while posing with other people. You get punished if I find you attractive. That's the kind of guy I am. I've always worried about how I smell after the show, so I'd invariably suck on a Ricola lozenge, figuring it was better to smell like cough drops than a 90-minute monologue with a fire-eating gasoline finish. Cray-Ray put an end to the Ricola. It's just sugar that I don't need. So I discovered breath strips, those little brightly colored Listerine pieces of weird-ass plastic that dissolve in your mouth. I found that if I stuck 5 of them in my mouth as I was running through the crowd, the flavor of them would overwhelm my sense of smell, and I wouldn't be bugged by audience members smelling like people. Once I discovered breath strips, I also discovered breath sprays, and I get to love those too. A burst of flavor without eating anything. These turn into my snacks. I was eating once a day, but I'd have decaffeinated coffee, tea, breath strips and spray anytime. Yum! A banquet. Day 51, 254.1. Day 53, 255.6. I was plateauing at a high weight for me. I went back up a few pounds and stayed there for a couple of days. After all this progress, it was discouraging. But even at this high weight, I was still lower than I could remember being. Years ago, I appeared on Dancing with the Stars. We weren't allowed to take dancing lessons before going on. I believe I was the only one who followed that rule. But we were allowed to exercise and diet. Using a grown-up, stupid diet consisting of a lot of protein, calorie counting, and a ton of exercise, I got myself down below 260 for a minute and was in pretty good shape. It was really hard to get down there. I went right back after I lost, and I lost quickly. I was the first one off the show. It was the best shape I've been in for years, and I felt great. Although I was still on all my blood pressure meds then, it wasn't the right kind of weight loss to help that. I really thought 260 would be my lowest weight, and now, riding with Cray-Ray, it seemed like 229 wasn't out of the question. Mind-blowing. Day 54, 251.3. A very nice correction. I was down where I expected to be and right back on track. My withing software tracked my weight and told me what I would have to do per day to hit my goal. I'd set my goal to weigh 229 pounds by my 60th birthday, March 5th, 2015. That would be down to the lowest weight I could find in my diaries, back in the 80s, off-Broadway. Day 55, 252.2. They say the two happiest days in a man's life are the day he buys his boat and the day he sells his boat. For me, one of the happiest days was the day I got my CPAP machine, and I was looking forward to the day I could get rid of it. The CPAP is a fat guy machine. The CPAP machine delivers continuous positive airway pressure while you're sleeping. Before I got the CPAP, I went for years without getting one good night's sleep. I never really got too much REM. I was exhausted and depressed all the time. My doc finally sent me to a sleep clinic. The woman at the clinic was sticking all sorts of pads, gizmos, and wires all over my face, head, and chest, looked different from the woman I had hoped would be watching me sleep. They were scheduling problems because I don't go to sleep until after 3 a.m. and it fucked with everyone's shifts, but I have my picture on the side of a building, so I got special treatment. Still, my picture on the side of the building wasn't big enough for me to get the woman I had hoped for to put me to sleep. My sleep doctor was pretty freaked by how many times I woke up each hour. My nights were not spent knitting up the raveled sleeve of care, but rather choking on my own fat. He prescribed a CPAP. He said he loved prescribing CPAPs because people really did get better overnight. And I really did get better overnight. The CPAP stopped my apnea. It stopped my fat neck from cutting off my air while I slept and choking me awake every minute or two. The CPAP kept constant air pressure so I could breathe all night and finally sleep. They did another sleep study. This time a small Asian man put me to sleep, closer to my fantasy, but still not dead on. And I was in REM the whole night. I was singing with an Athens, Georgia band. It was the best I ever felt before going on the diet. I loved, loved, loved my CPAP. It didn't make me attractive in bed, but it sure gave me my dreams back. I bought a bunch of them and then had them sent to the hotels where I'd be staying so I wouldn't have to take them through TSA check. I kept one permanently at my favorite hotel in L.A. I loved my CPAP. I would strap it on when it was time to sleep and it would start its gentle breeze, and off I would drift. I loved the sound and the feeling, even the straps around my head. They were a trigger for comfort and sleep. But as I lost weight, the CPAP changed. What used to feel like a gentle summer breeze as I slept was now blowing the nose off my face. I was choking in the other direction. It felt like I was trying to breathe in a hurricane. Then they came out with a new machine that automatically adjusted the air pressure you need. Easy sleeps next to me, and she'd heard the machine go from hurricane down to very gentle breeze. As of this writing, I've been at my target weight for 6 months, and I'm still using the CPAP. It's barely on, but I still love it and want it. The docs all say the next year the CPAP will go away, along with the rest of the meds. I'm looking forward to sleeping like a thin guy. The two happiest days in a fat fuck's life. The day he gets his CPAP and the day he gets rid of his CPAP. Day 57, 250.6. I had a flight to NYC. There was no airplane food that was going to be acceptable, so I went to a Chinese restaurant at the airport where they had plain rice. I got two orders of that and then went to the Mexican restaurant at the food court and copped a bunch of hot sauce. I hate the plastic bag carry-on, but I took that on the plane, and when it was supper time, I pulled it out and had cold rice for supper. According to Apocalypse Now, all I needed to add was some rat meat, and I could be Charlie. The horror. The horror. I get in and met with Lawrence O'Donnell. We usually go to a restaurant and talk politics. This time, went to his room and talked diets. The next day, I went out with friends. Went to a wonderful, fancy Mediterranean restaurant. It was food that I would have considered healthy just months ago. Lots of fish and olive oil and bread. But now it seemed like just pools of salt and fat. I had steamed vegetables, and for a real treat, I had some beets. At first, I was missing my taro masalata. Taro masalata, I'm putting that word in the book twice in a row so I can read it twice in a row for the audiobook. My buddy Christian Bach wrote a book called Eunoia, and each chapter is univocalic. Another word I look forward to reading aloud, meaning each chapter uses only one vowel. It has sentences like, a law as harsh as a fatwa bans all paragraphs that lack an A as a standard hallmark. And taro masalata is featured in this great sentence. Hassan wants kalamata shawarma, kasa bananas, and taro masalata. If you think that's great, check out his U chapter. You can whack to that one. Anyway, taro masalata is salted fish eggs and creamy gunk. I loved it. And I loved it because it was just salt and fat. Because it's yucky fish eggs, no one else ordered it, so I wasn't tempted. All the food looked wonderful and fresh. But once the conversation started, I was happy with my vegetables. I had to catch a plane to fly home for the father-daughter Valentine's Day dance. I got to Vegas in time to pick up Mox at school. The VD dance had an 80s theme this year, so Easy crimped Mox's hair, and she looked all Cyndi Lauper. I put on some of the clothes I wore in the Run DMC video we shot back in the 80s that now fit me again, and off we went to the dance with all the other fathers and daughters. We got our pictures taken, and I bought her flowers. All the upsells the school does to make more money. Who cares? We danced together, and although it wasn't 80s, we sang All About That Bass together. Moxie is small for 9 years old, so we can still slow dance with me holding her off the floor, and we jumped around together, and at my new weight, I could really jump around. I'm not saying I could keep up with the 9-year-olds, but I sure could go longer than my 330-pound fat fuck self. We were there for the whole event, and she stepped up to the mic and said, I love you, Daddy, as part of that tradition. Yeah, I cried. You got a problem with that? We went home, and Mox asked we'd go outside and look at the stars. We laid on the couch in the courtyard and looked up together. We talked about time and distance and how long the light takes to reach us. Then we talked about my mom and dad and sister and how hard they worked and what they meant to me and how much I missed them. We talked about traits Mox has that are like those my dad and my mom had. It was a time to be treasured. And as we spoke of my mom, dad, and sister, it was hard not to think they all died of illnesses related to diet. Maybe I'll be around a little longer for my little girl because I didn't eat the taro masalata. And now I get to say it again on the audiobook. Mox was tired, and I took off my coat, and she laid on my chest, and I put the coat over both of us. She fell asleep on my chest, and I slept a little too. But I also just enjoyed it. After about an hour, I carried her upstairs and put her to bed. She weighs just about half the amount of weight I'd lost, so carrying her up the stairs was about the same as just walking my own fat fuck ass up the stairs less than 3 months before. God damn! Day 63, 247.2. Day 64, 248.6. Day 65, 246.5. I have 17.5 pounds to go in 24 days. It's going to be close. Day 66, 246.3. Day 67, 247.8. The children wanted to go outside and play, and I just jumped up and did it. I did it when I was a fat fuck, too, but took a lot of saying to myself, time goes so fast, this is a chance to play with your children, and you don't want to miss it. But it's so easy at this weight. We played tetherball, and I was really into it. I pushed Z on the scooter and fell down on top of him. But I was light enough now that holding my weight above my son without crushing him was easy. We all laughed about our epic fail. 6 months ago, it would have meant a trip to the hospital. It's great to not be so fat that moving isn't fun. I was really able to play with my children. Kind of a big deal. Day 68, 246.9. Day 69, 245.6. Day 71, 244.6. Cray Ray had warned Godot and me that we hit a point where people would say how great and healthy we looked, and shortly afterward would start telling us we'd lost enough and we were now looking gaunt and unhealthy. It began with one of my L.A. buddies who said, "Okay now, cool it. You're starting to look sick. You done it. Now go back to eating normal." Cray Ray had predicted it. He says in some cases, friends and family try interventions and get doctors on board to tell the person to start eating. They throw around words they don't understand, like anorexia. Anorexia, I'm repeating that, but not for the audiobook, it's not a fun word to say, is a serious medical condition and is not tied in with our weight loss. We might be stupid, but we're not sick. We did the Penn Sunday School podcast. We had read about snorting chocolate and talked about it on the show, and someone in Canada, where it's being sold, sent us some. Had a fancy packaging and a little spring-loaded double nasal catapult. Godot cocked it and put two little Coke spoons full of their fancy chocolate and spice mixture in it, one on each side, and I held it under my nose, breathed in, and hit the button. We had checked with Cray Ray, and he said it wouldn't affect the diet, but it probably wasn't healthy. I love chocolate, and I got a big blast of it up my nose and down into my lungs. I kind of wanted to love it. The idea that I'd be snorting chocolate in my office while I was writing this appealed to me. It was a little fun, but really no more fun than walking into a Godiva store at a mall. It was the good smell of chocolate, and that was about it. We all tried it and enjoyed it a little, and then the headaches hit and we were done. I got to the show that night and was lightheaded from not eating, and my throat and voice were fucked up from snorting chocolate. I'm an idiot. Matt Donnelly, who does the Penn Sunday School podcast with Godot and me, sure noticed our weight loss. He has two babies. He's much younger than us, and he's been a fat fuck his whole life. As young as he was already on lots of blood pressure meds and was really worried about how long he was going to be around for his children. Godot and I weren't allowed to talk about our weight loss, but Matt was begging us. Cray Ray isn't a diet guru, but he's the man with the plan. I called him up and asked him to help our buddy Matt. I took Matt to the Apple store and bought him a couple of presents for his newborns. I bought him a withing scale and blood pressure cuff. If he was going to do it, he was going to do it right. Ray started working with him. Day 72, 242.9. We still weren't supposed to exercise, but we felt so fucking good that we had to move. I've always done everything I could to get out of exercise, but now I was running to my car and taking stairs two at a time. When the children suggested any activity, I would jump up to join them. 60 pounds is a lot of weight not to carry. Godot and I wanted to try riding our trikes again. Cray Ray said we were allowed to be active, that we could take a nice trike ride, but we couldn't push it. No real exercise. We got all Don Johnson, assholes who thought we were groovy, and rode around Godot's neighborhood. We weren't supermen. We got a lot lighter, but also a bit weaker. The balance was still in our favor, but it wasn't magic. We had a nice ride and a talk. Before we used to ride, I used to push myself, thinking that if I rode just a little harder for an hour, I would get thinner and feel a little less like I was about to die every second of my life. That compulsion was gone. And I was just enjoying being outdoors in the desert, chatting with a buddy and loving being alive in my new body. Hey, that ain't bad. Easy and I were still looking for a new home that would be better for the children. One house we looked at had fruit and nut trees. I texted Cray Ray and got his advice on trying one of the lemons and one of the black walnuts. He said that wouldn't set me back at all, so I did that. Just a couple of mouthfuls. But it was wonderful. It may seem silly that I was checking with Cray Ray over a mere mouthful, but it really matters. I have a great buddy and co-worker in NYC. He was a sick fat fuck and wanted to lose weight. He started following Dr. Joel Fuhrman's end-of-dieting diet and lost some weight and felt better. Fuhrman is better known in my house as Furburger, and by the time you finish reading this book, that's how you'll think of him, too. Then he started thinking, well, a little cream in my coffee isn't going to really fuck me up. And then, well, I can have a couple of shrimp on my salad at the club. Pretty soon he was shocked and depressed to discover that he wasn't losing weight and wasn't feeling as well. We're not talking homeopathy bullshit here. The memory dilution of a bacon bit is not going to end your life, but it doesn't take much to fuck up the cootie balance in your guts. And it doesn't take much to feel like a grade school child being punished instead of like a nut being hardcore. Mouthfuls matter. It's essential that I feel like a nut and not a weasel. I must. A nut calls someone to get permission to put one kernel of nut in his mouth. A weasel has a little soy milk in his coffee. The difference is everything to me. Everyone else wanted me to diet like a weasel, with cheat days and treats and things I deserve that wouldn't make any difference. A nut is hardcore. A nut is beautiful. Bob Dylan is a nut. Hillary Clinton is a weasel. Maybe you want to be Hillary. She changed the world and got a lot of power. But I want to be Bob. So I will do this fucking right. Day 73, 241.4. Day 74, 241.1. Day 75, 241.9. I started trying to add 3 pounds of steamed spinach with my with-the-mother-fucking-vinegar to my supper before the show. Cray Ray pointed out that spinach is kind of junk food. Yup. I'd gotten to the point where I was too healthy for spinach. He wanted me to try mustard greens and kale. Mustard greens are amazing. Green vegetables with built-in horseradish kick. I love them. Spinach was still easier to get, and although not bursting with many nutrients, it certainly wasn't a Big Mac. With the spinach in my stomach, I tried eating a little less of the corned bean stew and rice. I felt great, but I was still lightheaded during the show. Throughout the Penn and Teller show, there's a couple of dozen audience members. Some of them are just on stage to hold hands around Elsie while we make that African spotted pygmy elephant vanish. And some are on stage to just tell her. But with most of the rest of them, I ask their names, learn them, and use their names throughout the show. With my lightheadedness, I was forgetting their names. My mind would be racing. I'd hear their names, and when it was time to repeat them, I'd have a zillion more things in my mind, and I would have to ask them for their names again. That happened before, but it was rare. Now on my diet, it was common. I was asking people to repeat their names a lot. My lack of calories wasn't making me sluggish and stupid. It wasn't giving me headaches or a gnawing grumbling in my stomach. That's what happens on other diets. This Cray-Ray thing had me speeding. If you want a just-so story from evolution, well, the animals that lack calories and just lie down all crabby and depressed are going to starve right where they are. The animals that lack calories and bubble with energy and new ideas and feel like running around are more likely to find the calories they need and to live longer, fuck more, and pass those hungry dancing genes on to the next generation. The problem during the show was that I was feeling too good. My mind was racing. I had too many ideas to keep all the stuff I needed to do my job in my head. That's right. I'm trying to pass off being scatterbrained as a survival skill. I'd crossed a line. Teller wrote me an email pointing out that I was missing audience members' names in the show and going up on my lines now and again. This is a very heavy email. Teller and I have been partners for 40 years, and we don't bust each other on anything. When we're working on a bit, we argue about everything and talk about it. Everything sucks. But once a bit is up and on its feet and it's in the show, we trust each other to do our best jobs. We know that we're both working on making the show better. To send an email saying, essentially, you're fucking up, is nuclear. I want to stress that his email could not have been more measured and polite. Teller is the perfect business partner and artist. but the very existence of the email was a baseball bat to my face. I was losing weight and feeling wonderful, but I was fucking up our show. I was losing my focus. I wrote back to tell her and said that I knew I was fucking up and it was the diet and I wanted to get through it, but I would try to focus better. And I was sorry. He wrote back what he was supposed to write back, that no apology was necessary. He was just worried about me. Damn. At least he could have the common courtesy to be an asshole about it. I went into the show that night prepared to be perfectly focused. I was going to show that I was just as good as ever. I was going to be articulate and focused and remember all the names and not fuck up. I got through the first three lines of the show. Good evening. My name is Penn Jillette. This is my partner, Teller. We are Penn and Teller. And then stumbled and lost my place and mangled the words. I got our first new friend on stage and forgot her name right away. I'd psyched myself out. It was still a good show. I don't think the audience thought it was fucking up, but Teller knew. And that meant I really needed to pull it together. I had to get more potatoes or glucose or something on board. I was off a couple more blood pressure meds. I was doing great, but I couldn't fuck up the show and fuck Teller and our audiences. Fuck! Day 77, 237.7. We started planning my birthday party 12 days out. I was originally going to have a big blowout with hamburgers, bacon, donuts, hot fudge, ice cream, and fried chicken. Just really go nuts, eat myself sick. That's what seemed right when I began. But now it didn't seem like what I wanted at all, and I wanted to get all my friends together and have a meal that would feature all the wonderful food I would eat for the rest of my life. I wanted there to be no animal products, no refined grains, and stupid low levels of salt, sugar, and oil. We thought about doing it in L.A. because I would be shooting Sharknado 3 there, and I have a lot of friends in L.A. Easy called Jet Tila to find the perfect chef and started sniffing around for a place to have it. Day 78, 237.9. Day 79, 234.8. Day 80, 234.7. Day 81, 234.3. Day 82, 233.3. It was the final week. That was a very good weight. So close. I wanted to come in lower, but that's really good. I decided to do a couple days of just greens so I get my goal a little early. It would be nice to hit 229 and just be done with it. I was so close to my target weight. My birthday was so close that I did something I never do. I went clothes shopping. Easy, the long-suffering Glenn, and I went to a really fancy, expensive shop, and I bought pants. Remember, I started out with size 44 pants, and even on a good day, they were too tight. Now, a 36 was loose enough to tuck in a shirt without undoing the pants. I wanted to tuck in my shirts. I tried to find a black, silk, polka-dotted shirt like Dylan wore in Don't Look Back. I'm not young enough, or thin enough, or hip enough, but I am fuck you enough. We couldn't find it anyway. I can't remember ever enjoying shopping for clothes, but I did that day. I used to think clothes didn't fit me because I was 6'7", but that was only part of it. Maybe the bigger part was the fat fuck part, and I had that pretty much licked. Day 84. 229.8. Bingo! That's it. I made it with 5 days to spare. This is what it looks like. On October 10th, 2014, I weighed 320.6 pounds. I lost 16.3 pounds on my own, being a grown-up, in 59 days. That's 0.27 pounds a day. And that's not bad. On December 8th, 2014, I weighed 304 pounds, and I became a cronut. On February 28th, 2015, I weighed 229.8 pounds. The 320-pound starting weight was not my heaviest. At my heaviest, I was over 330, but I didn't weigh myself much then. Why would I? But with a combo of being a grown-up and Ray, I'd lost 90.8 pounds in 141 days. That's 0.64 pounds a day. And that's not just okay, that's amazing. I've lost 28% of my body weight. But this book is mostly about how I did it with Cray Ray. And that's where the numbers get really good. The fattest of the fat is the easiest to get off, and I did that by myself. The Cray Ray figures look like this. On December 8th, I weighed 304.3 pounds. And on February 28th, I weighed 229.8 pounds. In 82 days, I'd lost 74.5 pounds. That's 0.9 pounds a motherfucking cunt lapping day. I had lost 24.5% of my body weight in 83 days. Now, to start the hard part.